From the roots up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. A little later in the show, we're going to speak to the bluesologist emeritus, Norman Otis Richmond. And we're going to talk about a gentleman named Kendrick Lamar. And Otis knows a lot about the territory that from which Kendrick comes. I want to mention a number of things. We will be having on the, I'll probably give you the details later in the show, but the there are visitors to Canada from Israel, conscientious objectors, and what a good time to be a conscientious objector. It's heroic. These are very brave people speaking up against a government which is bent on apparently destroying what is called Gaza, making it unlivable. And as of today, people I assume know the news that they've started a policy of not permitting food into Gaza. That's the news. And this is, manifestly a war crime. I saw the Prime Minister of Israel talking. He said that you see, the food gets to the Hamas organization, and therefore the food that goes to those people, and they are, we do know, they're very glad to have not be starving, because some of it, or allegedly, comes from, would go to the Hamas group, no one will get any food. So this is... we'll see. No one's going to intervene there, by the way. Canada will not be sending any troops. They will not be lecturing. They will not be saying, we don't approve. They will look the other way, and the Gazans will die. That's pretty much it. At the moment, Canada is trying to line up to see if they can send troops to Europe. This is where we want to go today. And I suppose we should say maybe we should beware of the Ides of March. Some very dangerous things are happening. That's what I think we want to address mainly in the program. I'll just point out that March is the first month of the Roman calendar, the old Roman calendar. And we get the word March from the god of war, Mars. And March, historically, is the marching season, because in the old days, winter was up. People didn't fight in winter. Around here, they didn't, in Europe. But in March, as the ground began to thaw, they would move out and get and go looking for their enemies, or the ones that they decided to were going to be enemies, whether the other party knew they were about to become an enemy. So that's where we are. We're entering the marching season. And we've just had a bizarre episode. The whole world thinks they saw it. And I guess we should start there. They didn't actually see it. There's been a coverage of the encounter between the nominal president of Ukraine and the president of the United States and the vice president. By the way, there were other people in the room, on both sides. They were sitting in the Oval Office with Trump and Zelensky. We always say on the Taylor Report, and everybody should say, when you have encounters of a certain kind, close encounters of major figures, and something happens, you want to tread carefully and make sure you've actually kind of understand the circumstances, because such events are always leveraged into something else very quickly. And it'll turn on a remark, it'll turn on somebody's gestures, whatever. But it's very important to remember or to make sure you've understood what happened. And the first thing I think has been pointed out, I would incidentally go to people like Aaron Maté. Aaron Maté has been talking about this very well and is regularly tweeting about it, as has and Max Blumenthal and others, but that the clip of the sharp exchange was treated as though that was the entire conversation between these major figures, when in fact there were 50 minutes of conversation. 40 of the minutes were amiable and ordinary political conversation of the type that the Washington stages, whether no matter what the president, which president, where they sit in the Oval Office and they make nice. So there was for 40 minutes, 40, they were getting along and everything seemed to be sailing as orchestrated. These things are usually carefully choreographed, but these are not ordinary times, so everybody, I suppose, was on the edge of their seat. And then a reporter, by the way, I haven't heard a reporter report on who the reporter was, but he put a question, as I saw it. This is like judging a boxing match. As I saw it, he put a question that was directed towards Trump. Trump made an answer, and then I believe Vance said something, and then the president, as he's called, of Ukraine. I say that because, in fact, shelf life had run out. He hasn't run for re-election. He said there won't be an election. Why Trudeau and others all claim how much they love democracy and that we're all going to be fighting to preserve that democracy. Mr. Xi hasn't. He chose not to have an election. So at any rate, they had the exchange. And who sparked it? I haven't seen an answer to that. And what was the dispute about? Well, of course, actually it was about not understanding each other or choosing not to understand each other. But the part that isn't being very well reported, and that's partly because of Trump's style of running a blitz. He likes to shock everyone. He likes to make things happen so quickly that people become confused. But there was actual substance, and that was that there would be a two-part process. And the first part was going to be the economic deal. We live now in the world where deal is the magic word. And so there was going to be a deal. But it had two parts. So the first part of the deal was that Zelensky and company would come to the White House and they would sign an agreement where their minerals the ones most valued by the U.S. would be put under U.S. American business control. Therefore, the U.S. would be a beneficiary. Instead of saying, they were saying we want payback for the money we've given you, but actually they were going to get more than that. But the security would come would be related to this, because if U.S. companies were going to be given the minerals of Ukraine, I'm not going to say how many or how much, but if they were going to be given those minerals and American companies were going to be there, there's an inherent security built into that proposition, because the notion being that if the U.S. is present and doing business there in a non-confrontational adversarial relationship to Russia, assuming Russia agrees, then there's nothing to worry about, because America would protect its own interests if somebody threatened the country. But that's the first part of the deal. And so what they were going to do was have their little White House show. Then they were going to step over to another spot, and they were going to sit at a table and sign that agreement. Then there is a second part, the more complicated, which is the peace agreement itself. And so that got botched, because the subject of the security was suddenly being talked about when that isn't what they were there for. They were there to talk about, are you going to make a deal over the minerals, which the president of nominal president of Ukraine said he was going to do. So that didn't happen, because an argument broke out over security and became very visibly unpleasant. By the way, I think everybody should be glad to be watching these things. But when they think they have watched it, they better stop and say, why was I given a five-minute clip? The first clip I saw was the New York Times put it up, and it was 5 minutes of just a sharp encounter. They didn't tell me, when they showed me the five-minute clip, that there had been 45 minutes that I didn't get to see. Had I seen the 45, that would have reduced the discussion of whether or not it was a trap. So people, because now we have a conspiracy. By the way, people love conspiracy theories. You can insult somebody by saying, oh, you have a conspiracy theorist. But every other day, that's what our press is full of, their own conspiracy theories. So all the big brains began to sweat and say, well, who trapped who? Was it a setup, et cetera? Well, I guess then if you're doing the forensics, somebody should say, who asked the question that started the ball rolling? And I don't know the answer. And I'll bet a bunch of you don't know the answer. And then why didn't somebody explain that this is a two-part discussion where they were supposed to be talking about minerals on one day and then talk about the security question on another? So that's the part that's been missing in the whole. Well, I shouldn't say it's not exactly missing. We have some very bright people who are following, but at the moment we have to be very aware that we're entering truly dangerous territory. Truly dangerous territory. And I think it is a mockery of us that the prime minister went off to Europe to meet with the mighty Starmer of London and the most loved president of France, Macron, and their cronies in NATO, and to say that they're going to fly to the rescue. They're going to, how about the magic word of the day? They say they're going to, tell me if you have heard this somewhere before. They're going to form a coalition of the willing. The first use of that term, to my knowledge, was Mr. Bush after 9/11, when he said, you're for us or you are against us. And he then heroically smashed into Afghanistan and created absolute havoc and bloodshed, and from which we barely staggered out. When we're, according to ordinary, what I'm hearing, we're probably going to go staggering back. But it was called the Coalition of the Willing. And then they did the Coalition of the Willing went after Iraq. And the Coalition of the Willing destroyed Libya. So anyway, Starmer will lead us. And Trudeau is talking about troops. Now, this is really wonderful. Here he is, pounding his chest, in a, you know, figuratively, saying all these right and wonderful things about heroic, about standing up and being a tough guy, tough, and we're not going to blah, blah, we're going to do this. He's going out the door. This is, this duck is not even lame anymore. And there he is, standing alongside his friend Zelensky, who may also be going out the door. We'll have to see. But this is going to be heavy, heavy going. So now they have a coalition, they say, of the willing. And Trudeau is talking about providing troops, which... I want to say two important things about this in my mind, that there's an echo here of history. We've had two major wars in Europe, and World War One and Two, and each time the Americans were the last ones in. And if I see, if you look at the way this is moving, you would say, gee, it looks kind of like World War One and Two, the prelude, because the U.S. did not enter World War One until the last year of the war. And it did very well militarily, but primarily economically. And it became a great power out of World War One when everybody else is exhausted. They didn't lose very many troops, and they picked up a lot of power and became a major power. Then along came World War II, and U.S. did, and I'll point out, Canada was among the first in World War One, and it was in among the first in World War II. That's what we're talking about. Canada went to war in 39 under our king, and by the way, they sang God Save the King. They did not sing O Canada, they sang God Save the King. All the commanding officers were British. So here we are, Starmer and the lame duck, talking about how they might provide troops to Ukraine. That's so I'm just saying, to remind you, there's some kind of an echo, because the U.S. seems to be moving to the back of the ranks, and the old Europe, which hasn't won a war in quite a while, is finding itself at the front, dangerously close to the front, I would say. And actually, if I were judging by the Globe and Star and everybody else, they all want to be there. So, again, I remind you, World War II, United States did not declare war on Germany. Germany declared war on the United States. That's when we began to fight Germany. We didn't say, oh, bad old Hitler, we're going to go get him. No, we did not. Franklin Roosevelt avoided and avoided, and his concentration was in the Pacific. So here we are. I'm saying there are echoes here of previous encounters, which ought to be avoided. Last point on the before we go to Otis is I want to say is that there seems to be surprise or shock when they say, well, what is Trump up to, this thing of trying to cut a deal and work it all out? Were you here when they had the election? Because he ran on a saying, and if one of the things he said loudest was, I'm going to end that war. I can get it done before I even take office. Well, this is March, which is not a long time from November. But he ran saying he was going to end it. And so now there's shock that he was going to cut a deal and end it. So if you like wars and you really have an appetite for it, you might get one, because now you don't want to see a deal. Everybody wants to jump in and shake hands with Zelensky. They better ask themselves how Zelensky got the power in the first place. There was a coup in 2014, and they had been promised an election in which the president of the country, the then president, the elected president, would participate. But instead, thanks to the United States and Victoria Nuland and others, they staged a violent coup, and then they recognized those who had used violence in Maidan Square, made the place ungovernable. Then they took power, and they denied to the eastern part of the country their rights. They began immediately to attack the Russian language and the eastern portion of Ukraine, that didn't like what happened in Maidan. Nobody in the West cared, but the Russians cared. So World War I and World War II came about with the U.S. slowly backing off and letting the Europeans fight each other. And that's a vocabulary we're dealing with now. Trump is saying, oh, you want to fight each other? Go ahead. And, of course, Canada says, yes, we want to fight too, because it's our habit to do what the Europeans want us to do. And really interesting times. And this is the Taylor Report. We're going to have a little music, and we'll be back.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From Mona Vista to the Vancouver Island, from the Arctic Circle to the Great Lake waters, this land was made for you and me.
As I went walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley.
This land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land. From Mona Vista to the Vancouver Island, from the Arctic Circle to the Great Lake water, this land was made for you and me.
When the sun came shining and I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving and the dust clouds rolling, as the fog was lifting, a voice was chanting, saying, this land was made for you and me.
There you go. Nice song from the Travelers. And I'll take a theme from that, which is we better start meditating as a country, not as a member of a gang, but as a country. Not as a member of a gang, NATO, or EU. As far as I know, we're not in EU. There's a G7, there's a G20, and then there's a G-Wiz. What is all this about? We need a meeting of the country, and obviously we're not going to have one. What we're going to have is the usual three-party, four-party show of people full of clichés. But meanwhile, they use these clichés to push us towards very dangerous situations. I'll just tell you, if you don't know, that NATO, for all those who happily and rightly were saying we shouldn't have a NATO, we may not have a NATO, because when you get people falling out with each other, you can lose big organizations that you thought were important, and they will just disappear like the morning dew under the sun. So that we are in that situation. I'll tell you flatly, I heard that Mr. Musk, who seems to be the deputy president, he says U.S. should get out of NATO and out of the United Nations. Pretty, and for all those who say, oh, who needs it? You better start asking, do you need it or not? And by the way, the United Nations was the creation of by the victors of World War II. So now the victors of World War II, who created the United Nations, are starting to talk to each other in an unpleasant way. And I hate to say that, but but that means that if they fall out, bad things can happen, and it can happen fast. And when they say, "Well, we got a budget. We're going to have a military," and it, by 2032, no, sonny boy, you may only have 6 months, because if you put your nose into a problem, they don't wait around for your budget to come in. I hate to say that, but. Country needs to have a serious discussion with itself. At the moment, there's a lot of people running flags up and down. That may or may not. Basically, it's a symptom of the crisis that the imperial order is in. When people say they hate Trump because he says America first, well, where were you when Obama declared that in every fiber of his being, he believed in American exceptionalism? And at the time when he said that, he wasn't the first. Every American president says that, actually, that they believe in American exceptionalism. No, Canadians didn't raise an eyebrow. Nobody said, hey, how could you be the exceptional? We don't believe in exceptional countries. We're all equal, aren't we? They never said that to Obama. But when Trump just reshuffles the deck and says we're number one, or we're first, he hasn't said anything different. He just speaks some more colloquial language, the kind that an ordinary American understands, which is one of the secrets of his success in politics. He doesn't actually talk like politicians are trained to talk, which makes, you know, most political speech is designed to keep everybody calm. Also, I already pointed out, Bush said, you're either for us or you're against us. Of course, Canada said, we're for you. But now the Europeans are saying, well, maybe we're not for you. So then the answer to that is, well, if you guys want to fight, go ahead and do it. And so the leading country, of course, will be popping up soon. That'll be Germany. Because they're never going to let France or the UK lead if they're going to be stuck on their own. So they'll have to sort themselves out. pretty sobering stuff, I think. Hey, thanks to Pedro, who already knows what he's doing. He actually was listening to the show when he produced the name of the journalist, Brian Glenn, from Real America Voice, who asked the question that caused the room to go up in smoke between Trump and Zelensky. So how about that? We answered the question, and it was due to Pedro. I thank him very much. There's some other dramatic things happening, and on this show, we've talked about it, that we are very pleased that Mexico seems to be more grounded and more determined to assert itself against America because it's in their political DNA. They're used to the idea that America says it's exceptional and that America will take territory if it feels like it. By the way, Canada has never objected to U.S. taking people's territory. They didn't mind. As a matter of fact, joined in happily to bomb Libya. Definitely went over the top in helping out in Syria. And as you recall, they decided it would be a good idea to name the president of Venezuela Guaido. And it was our own Chrystia Freeland who went all the way down to Lima, Peru, and they had the Lima meeting, and they said, okay, the president of Venezuela is not the president of Venezuela because we've already named another president. So we're dealing with cynical, imperialistic hubris of the worst order, and we're all comfortable with it. We all love it. We all say, pat ourselves on the back. Yeah, we can name the president of Venezuela. We can drop bombs on Gaddafi and laugh about it, and it was laughed about. We laughed as hard as Hillary Clinton. So now the boss stepped on our toes, see? So, and that's kind of embarrassing. So anyway, to refer back to Mexico, well, here comes, they say, the tariff, it's supposed to be tomorrow. It may be put on hold. Trump plays so many games. But everybody's giving way to him. He said, name a fentanyl czar. Thank heaven, I don't even know how to pronounce it. Fentanyl czar. And we said, we don't need a fentanyl czar. And then the premier of Alberta says, yes, we do. And then all of a sudden, we're doing what she wants us to do. And we named a fentanyl czar. And Mexico now is being told, we want to call the your gangs, drug gangs, we want them to call them terrorists. Mexico said, we don't want to do that. Justin Trudeau said, well, they are terrorists. He and Trump agreed to call them terrorists. Now, Mexico is under so much pressure that they turned over 29 drug czars or big shots to the American government in a matter of hours. And these were heavy hitter people in Mexico. Mexico is going to be, they're trying to fight off the ugly experience of the tariffs. The big one to watch is that according to Globe and Mail, there's been an agreement that between Mexico and the U.S. to put new tariffs on China, sort of what you call the Doug Ford plan. We will become Fortress America, and we will see if we can hurt China by putting a heavy tariff on them, and also not permitting them to import automobiles, the whole thing. And frankly, I have to just say, as much as I admire the Mexican leadership, this is how much pressure they're under. There seems to be an agreement. But again, I got to have to say that, everything's becoming very unstable. On the one hand, we're cooperating and doing what Trump wants us to do on China, but we're not cooperating so far on the Ukraine front. So I raise the specter. This is March, the first month of the Roman calendar, and it is marching season. So some things are going to happen shortly, and you can bet that I would say that the danger of war is very great. And I think Canada will enter with as much enthusiasm as possible because we're led by a bunch of idiots. This is the Taylor Report, and according to Pedro and McKendy, we got to go.